Don't panic. For the next hour, let Steve and Paul talk you down from that ledge, right here on RFI. They're the host who won't cop out when there's panic all about.
Welcome to the Don't Panic Radio Show. My name is Steve Vincent. Sitting right over there is Paul Schultz.
Hey, everybody.
Don't you forget, nothing you're about to hear is true. Oh, and before I forget, thanks for listening. Thanks for liking. Thanks for sharing. And very special week. I know every week is very special, but this one is very, very special with two exclamation points. Because sitting right over there is none other than the one and only MP Cavalier.
Sitting over where?
Right over there, just right to my right.
Is that where I am?
Paul's on my left.
This is where the audio cheering is going to come in.
Right. Right.
And then the
I am humbled and honored.
In that order.
Exactly. Just wait till we're done with him.
Oh, you know,
I'll never work in this town again.
Maybe you should play the Dalzell too when I announce MP. Dun, 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 dun. Oh, don't play it. Just do me humming it.
There you go. Well, yeah, hum a few bars,
and he'll fake it.
So, let's do a little mutual hand job here. MP, it is fantastic to have you on. Seriously, we talk about you almost every week.
Just I know, about. I listen to your show almost every week.
That's fantastic. I do too.
Yeah, I love your show.
I sometimes listen to our show too.
I just throw it together and fling it out the door. I don't even listen.
It's like your poop. All right, 2 minutes and 11 seconds in, we already got a poop joke.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. At some
not
point,
not gonna get any better than that.
That's true. Well, there's still masturbation, mm-hmm, and rape. We have to get to that.
There's still that.
Too. It's not masturbation. It's show prep.
Oh, right.
Well, I'm extremely excited to be on the show tonight. I'm really happy to do it. I'm closer and closer to realizing my dream of being a guest on every show on Radio Free Indie and Indie in Tune. So I got one more to go, and I can retire.
Wow! So we weren't your first.
No. I've been on a couple of other shows.
Well,
we're his first DP though.
Yes. Well, no. This is the biggie. I mean, I was like really really excited about this. I sent the wife and kids away for the night. I think. I know I put them outside and locked the door. I don't know where they went from there.
Did you at least let her have the car keys?
Oh, fuck no.
Oh, well. Yeah.
Can I curse on this show?
Shit, no.
Damn it.
Watch your goddamn mouth. There's fucking old people listening to the show.
Old people and children listen to this show.
Paul's fucking mom might be listening.
Yeah, yeah. Because that'll happen.
My mother listens to my show every week religiously.
Does she?
Yes, she prays for me at the end of it every week.
Okay, this is going to sound extremely, I don't know the word, racist? No, that's not right. Bigoted? Ignorant? Ignorant, that's the word. So your mom prays to God, right?
She's kind of a, I call my mother a, she's a Holocaust survivor atheist.
Oh, well, who does she pray to?
She prays to pretty much the same God as most of us honkies.
Yeah, okay, all right, the white God.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
long white beard, white robe, hangs okay. out with a bunch of drinkers and smokers. Hangs out with the Beatles, yeah.
Lemmy Kilmister, Who else died recently?
David Bowie.
David Bowie. Abe Vigoda.
Hillary Clinton.
Abe Vigoda is God. You can't spell Abe Vigoda without God.
He's right. You can't spell God without Abe Vigoda.
Exactly.
So we're off to a pretty fast start here. We'll try to slow it down a little bit for our less intelligent listeners, of which we have just a few, I think. So why is MP on tonight? That's a good question.
Yeah, glad I was you home. That's what I want. That's what I want to know.
He was home. Paul and I couldn't think of anything to talk about, and we know MP can always think of something to talk about. So we said, let's have MP on the show. No, it was, I got a, well, there are two things. One is Monday or Tuesday, I got a text from MP that said, your show should be live. It would be so funny if you could have call-in guests, which, by the way, we've talked about a lot for a couple of reasons. One is it would be evidence that people are actually listening.
There's that.
Another is it would be really fun to, like, play off of the whatever they came up with, because we are fans of the comedy art known as improv.
And huge fans.
And there's nothing funnier than something somebody says that they just thought of but haven't really thought through yet to decide whether it's funny.
I gotta go.
you can go on this show. We just go right in our pants, so go.
That's right.
Go for it.
I think I just went.
So I said, well, how about you call in on Wednesday? It doesn't have to be live. To which I think it was immediately after that where the text, MP had asked me to do something on Sunday, which I promised to do. And then on Monday, I got this little exchange, and then it said, so, ... And I was like, ah, fuck. I forgot to do that thing MP asked me to do. And so he did invite me to come talk about sex addiction on the Do It Indie Radio Hour show. And I think, I wish I could have done it. My family and work situation wouldn't allow it. Let's just put it this way. My wife doesn't know I do this show. And if she's gone on Wednesday nights, so that's how I get away with it. And so if I were mysteriously gone on a Monday night, it could cause problems. I'm not saying that I'm in an abusive situation. I'm not saying that. Okay? I would never say that.
You just run into a lot of doors, that's all.
Thank you. That's what I was trying to say. But I think I'm somewhat of an expert on sex addiction. I'm like a sex addict, only with masturbation.
Show prep.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, if I may, the way that this all started is I had decided at some point a few weeks ago to abandon any political discourse on social media personally, because it was making me sick. I would get physically sick reading the stuff, and then I would make myself even more physically sick responding to it.
I think you announced that, didn't you,
on Facebook? Yeah, I said I wasn't doing it anymore, and I started to feel a lot better. But what the result of that was, since I was now scrolling past any Facebook post that had anything to do with the election cycle, I was now reading all the stuff that I would usually scroll by to read stuff about the election cycle. So I flip-flopped my preferred content, and so now I was reading, like, all the clickbait and all the viral stuff and all the, hey, here's a cute, you know, cat video, stuff like that. And one of the things I came across was an article, a very long article that was written by this woman who was telling the story about this guy that she started dating in college, and things moved pretty fast. She really dug him, and he cheated on her, and she dumped him. And then he won her back, and then they got married and started this whole life together. And then he cheated on her again, and she caught him, and he said, Well, I'm a sex addict. Now, at this point in the story, I kind of drew that psychic line where I said, okay, this is the end of the first part of the story. The second part of the story is going to be her kicking him in the balls, hitting him over the head with a frying pan, shooting him, kicking him out of the house, emptying his bank account the next day, some kind of revenge story, some kind of burning bed story.
Throwing an ashtray at him like Hillary did to Bill?
Yeah.
Yes.
But it was not that at all. It was the exact opposite of that. It was her saying, oh, you're a sex addict. Okay, let's get a therapist. Let's go into a program together. Let's go to therapy together, and let's get you well. And then she goes on to tell that whole story about how they went to therapy together, and there's this whole program that he had to get into, which she had to participate in, and how his sex addiction and all the stuff that came along with it impacted their lives and impacted their friendships and their external relationships and their internal relationships. And I'm sitting there reading this story, and I'm shaking my head, and I'm saying, does this woman... I couldn't believe it was for real. I thought it was comedy. And then I realized it wasn't comedy, I, for lack of a better word, and I would only say this on this show, I wouldn't say this on my show, and I said, this woman's a fucking nitwit. She's an idiot. Her husband's not a sex addict. Her husband's just a cheater.
Uh-huh.
So as I started getting now bile level angry about this story, I started doing a little bit of research about sex addiction. And of course, I did it on my work computer, not on my personal computer.
Well,
so yeah. So I'm reading about this addiction, and yes, it is a real thing. Most clinical therapists recognize it as an actual malady, and there are treatments for it and programs for it, and there's an online test. You can take several versions of the online test that you can take to tell whether or not you're a sex addict and need to take therapy and all this other stuff. And I just, you know, I said this on my show the other night. I call shenanigans on this whole deal. This is a bunch of crap. It's just a way for therapists to make money and for people to cheat on their spouses. It's crap. And
Steve, you need to get one of those lists up so we can take the test on the air.
The test is ridiculous.
Couple of things. First, called shenanigans.
Who?
You can cut that. Do the rooster thing. MP is called shenanigans. So, everybody go get your brooms. All right. Everybody have their brooms? All right, cool.
Now, I am not a licensed therapist. I only play one on the radio.
That's right. Second of all, yes, we have got to find one of these tests. We've got to post it. Because we did the Are You an Alcoholic test.
Yeah, yeah.
On a show.
It's the same test.
So we'll take the test in the second half of the show. We'll find out if we're sex addicts.
Yeah, you just have to Google, am I a sex addict? And I looked at five or six different versions of the test, but all the questions are relatively the same.
That's the way the alcoholic test was. It was like, mm-hmm. it was just a big loop to eventually get you to, if you've even like drank cough syrup, you're an alcoholic.
Yeah, right. You know, I guess if you think about it, I was going to argue with you, and I may still, because that'd be more interesting than us all just sitting here agreeing with each other.
Argue with me?
Yeah.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, I was going to, but then it dawned on me the similarities between what you're saying and the alcoholic show that we did, which is, okay, here's the analogy. Let's say you are Ford. And you can convince people that they can find out what kind of car they should buy just by taking a simple test. So, hey, all of you people looking for a car, we're just here to provide a service, the Ford Motor Company. So here, take this test, and it'll tell you what kind of car you should buy. And, oh my God, 80% of the people that take the test find out they should go buy a Ford, right? So... to go to an alcoholic treatment center website to take a test to find out if you're an alcoholic. Now, I realize that in the minds of many, there's a difference because you don't necessarily get into auto manufacturing CEO business for the same reason that you get into addiction treatment business, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean... CEOs don't go around saying, I just wanted to make sure people had a car that made them happy, you know?
That's what they might tell people.
That's what they might tell people, right? So anyway, so I'm arguing with myself.
My argument is not with the therapeutic part of it. I mean, if I was a licensed therapist, I would be all over this because I got kids to put in through college. I got a house to pay for. I got car payments to make. So I'd be all over it because it's my bread and butter. Therapy is how I would be making my money. And if there was this thing out there, you know, if I went to the yearly, you know, seminar in Paducah or whatever, wherever the hell they have it, and somebody got up and said, sex addiction, and they gave this 2-hour seminar about this new, you know, this new addiction that's been identified out there because of internet porn and the proliferation of, you know, available, you know, material, I'd be all over it. But here's the thing, I'm not. I'm just a dude. I'm in a faithful, a long-term relationship and marriage. I absolutely love my wife. I would never cheat on my wife. I don't understand people who cheat. I get it, but I don't understand it. There's a fine line. So my argument is not with the therapeutic part. My argument is with the spouses, 88% of which are female, are wives, who buy into this crap. When their husbands get caught sticking their shit where it shouldn't be, they turn around and instead of saying, I'm really sorry, it'll never happen again, I don't know what came over me, I'm in love with you, or, hey, let's have a three-way, they say, I'm a sex addict, I got to get into a program. And these women buy into this crap. And I compare it to, what was it, 15 years ago, the big thing was every time a celebrity got caught doing some stupid shit, they turned around the next day and said, I'm addicted to painkillers, or I got anger management issues, or, you know, my dad was an asshole, so I have to go into therapy. It's just kind of, and I'm not dissing therapy as a thing. I understand why people have to do it. But this particular one pisses me off because all it does is it plays into this little game that people play with each other when they're in a non-committed relationship, or when one of them is in a non-committed relationship, where now here's this excuse I can roll out when I get caught doing something stupid. Because you know, you guys know, I hope you think that the way I think, that if this guy had never gotten caught, he would have never played the sex addict card. He would only play it when he got caught.
Right. It was like his backup plan.
So
that's my problem with this.
So let's play this out a little bit. Now, I'm going to make some assumptions that were probably not in the article. I haven't read the article, and I only know what I remember from what you just said 3 minutes ago.
Let's do it. I'm drunk.
Yeah. So let's play it out. All right. So dude gets caught cheating, right? Uh-huh. Girl already knows that he has cheated, right? And he apologized, and they got, you know, it's like, sorry, I love you, promise I'll never do it again. So let's get married. They get married. She loves, I'm going to make an assumption that she loves him for some reason, or that she, forget the love part. I mean, forget the romantic love part. Let's just do she has some reason for wanting to be married to this guy, right?
She's committed to him.
So yeah, she has some reason to be committed to him. Whatever it is,
he may be a great guy. I'm giving him and her the benefit of the doubt, both sides.
Yeah, let's say he's a great guy. All right, so he goes out, he cheats. She finds out he cheats, and she says, "Okay, look, I'm committed to you, but I can't be committed to you and have you continue to cheat, right?" And he says, "Okay, I get it. I'm sorry, and what can I do?" You know, to like, I'll never do it again. I promise. You've promised that before. And I imagine there's some lamps being thrown and some walls being kicked and things like that.
Quite possible.
You said you would never do it again the last time. It's like, but this time I mean it. Well, how can I know you mean it? How do I know you will never do this again? And at some point he goes, okay, look, I don't know because I didn't want to do it this time, or I didn't want to do it doesn't make sense, because obviously he wanted to do it because he did it. But I had no intention of ever doing it, but I was on a business trip, I had some drinks, and there was this girl, and I did it, right? So maybe there's something, maybe I'm mental, maybe I'm messed up in the head, but I care enough about you to go to a therapist and find out if there's something that's screwed up in my head, right? Not that, so what if he's not using it as an excuse to get out of trouble, But what if he's like, I really, okay, so the analogy might be, dude gets pulled over for drunk driving, and the wife is like, I can't live like this, right? I can't live with you getting drunk all the time. I can't live with you driving drunk. You might drive drunk with our kids in the car. That can't happen. What are we going to do about this? Mm-hmm. So he goes and he finds out, hey, there's treatment for addiction to alcohol, right? Mm-hmm. So what makes the sex addiction different from any other addiction?
Because it's fucking sex, dude. We're all addicted. Not all of us are alcoholics, but everybody is addicted to sex. And this is my argument with calling it what they're calling it. We are all addicted to sex. I don't know. I've never met anyone in my adult life that isn't addicted to sex. I love it. If I could do it 24 hours a day, I would do it, but I would do it with my wife. And that's my argument with this thing. This particular guy, and not just him, I'm talking about this whole sex addict thing. I mean, David Duchovny, the actor, the X-Files guy, he was the first one to bring this. He was the one who brought thank you. He was the one who brought this into the public eye. Probably 8 or 9 years ago. These guys aren't addicted to sex; they're pussy hounds. And just admit that you're a pussy hound.
As soon as he did that to the public eye, there was an epidemic of pink eye. By the way,
yes, so. Yeah, absolutely, there was an epidemic. There was.
I don't know. I
would think, okay, if you're an addict to anything, okay, like alcohol, drugs, whatever. In my head, the way I'm thinking about it, like, you would make sure you had your supply, your source. So one would think one source would be one's wife and not the neighbor lady and, you know, the stewardess and the girl at work. When it's not to be sexist, but it's there. It's right there. And you choose to go get it over here. No heroin addict. It's going to go, I'm not going to go to my usual guy today. I'm going to go to this person that I don't really know.
I don't know about that.
I don't know that you can apply the same rules to substance as you can to euphoria.
Okay.
But it's the same chemical reaction in the brain.
Right.
It's a release of dopamine, right?
Yeah.
And so you found a way to release the dopamine.
Mm-hmm.
You may also be, so that's the physical addiction part. Mm. You may also be somewhat psychologically addicted or biologically addicted is the wrong word, but there are some urges that you have. Okay. And you would say, well, you would go to your wife to get that, as long as you're only looking at what, the last couple hundred years of human existence?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at through, I mean, that's a recent phenomenon that we said, oh, I'm only going to have sex with my wife. I mean, I suppose peasants might have done that. But those of us who are descended from royalty, like the three of us, you know, I mean, having sex with whoever was maybe not for women, but for men, it was a thing. Right?
Yeah, but
didn't you say that 88% of the 88% of the people that were cheated on were women for this?
Yeah, so the official standing statistic as of 2014 was that from the data that they have, and the data that they have is only people who have actually admitted that they are sex addicts, only 12% of those people are women. Now, just sidebar, the majority of that 12% have also admitted to taking physical action on their addiction. So you can kind of put that in your little infograph. But
I'll put that in my little, we need to get WikiLeaks
like a USA Today. We need like a USA Today.
You know, we need WikiLeaks to publish their phone numbers.
So again, I mean, I'm calling shenanigans on the sex, the label of sex addiction. Because to me, if you look at what an addict does, a heroin addict, a cocaine addict, a fentanyl, you know, any oxycodone, any of these things that people get addicted to, they want it all the time. They have to have it all the time. Sex addicts only seem to admit to being sex addicts when they get caught in the act of having sex with someone they're not supposed to be having sex with. That's my argument with this. My other part of this is that alcohol addiction, drug addiction, gambling addiction have existed for a really long time, almost as long as sex. I'm pretty sure that right after the first couple to ever have sex had sex, they probably played a nice game of pinochle for, you know, rocks or sticks or the last piece of the saber-tooth tiger. But all of a sudden, we're in this part of our evolution as a species where every time we fuck up, all we have to do is add the word addict to the thing that we did to fuck up, and we're forgiven. That pisses me off. So as a whole kind of, you know, the addict label that we put on anything that we do wrong pisses me off. But the thing that really got me going about this was that this woman sat there and took it. And it made me so angry. I could feel it in my throat. I was so angry. I didn't know what to do. I wanted to like reach out to her and like punch her in the dick. I didn't know what, you know, I didn't know what to do with myself. I was so mad, you know?
Have you ever done the thing where like, I'm trying to figure out how to explain it. Like if you took the women that or victims or whatever you want to call them and backtracked like their life history, I'm willing to bet there's like a thing in their past, like say maybe mom and dad are divorced or mom or dad cheated or mom cheated or whatever, and mom or dad took it. And this is what's normal to them, and that's probably why they buy into it. Because I've discovered that the more, when somebody has some kind of weird, irrational response to something, you can backtrack on their life and see why they do that.
So what's the difference between Bob, who cheats on his wife regularly,
fucking Bob,
gets caught, and says, sex addict, and his buddy Fred, who cheats on his wife regularly and gets caught,
love
and
Fred,
takes the frying pan to the side of the head and sleeps at a motel for a couple of nights, goes to the store, buys the flowers, buys the chocolates, goes home, gets on his hands and knees, apologizes, I swear to God, honey, it'll never happen again. What's the difference between those two dudes other than one guy read an article on the internet and said, oh, man, I have an out.
And get out of jail.
It almost feels to me, like a bunch of these dudes got together somewhere in some dark clandestine place, the golf club, and said, hey, guys, I got a great idea. If you ever get caught, here's all you have to say. Here's my therapist's phone number. He'll back you up.
It's like the Hangover 5.
I just want to correct one thing. You may not be aware, but the Don't Panic radio show is all about inclusion and diversity. Mm-hmm. So I just want to back up a little bit. Sex addiction is not just something that affects white people. Mm-hmm. So when MP said the golf club, he could just as well have said the basketball court too. So I don't want people to think we're just talking about white people on this show.
No, I'm talking about no. I'm talking about strictly white Jews.
Oh. Could have been the badminton court.
Well, bringing up the golf club though, he could have been referring to Tiger Woods, because you know
the Pinochle Gym.
Wasn't he supposedly a sex addict?
Yes, he was.
Both of his parents were white though.
I actually got in an argument with a guy in a bar one time because this guy was a golfer, and he was like, No. Tiger Woods is white. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Well, his dad's white.
No. It follows the mom.
But when he's pulling shit out on the paper, like, what do you circle then? You know, white, non-white, black, non-black. What does Tiger Woods fill out on that form?
Golfer.
Golfer.
Athlete. Professional
athlete. Sex addict.
So what if the difference between Bob and Fred is Fred buys the flowers, Fred does the sorry, Fred gets on his knees, promises never to do it again. But Bob actually commits to getting treatment so that maybe he stands a chance of not doing it again.
My argument is that he doesn't need the treatment because there's no such thing as sex addiction.
So you don't think that any amount of him going to a therapist to find out why he steps out on his wife from a mental, psychological perspective?
I'm sure the therapist will figure something out. Yeah. But to me, the truth of the matter is, like I said earlier, if Bob never got caught, Bob would never be a sex addict.
Well, that's his rock bottom, right? Nobody's an alcoholic until they, you know, nobody's an alcoholic until they like lose their job and their kids and their wife. And now they're like, oh shit, I guess
no,
I am.
No, that's totally untrue. There are millions and millions of functioning alcoholics. There's three of them sitting on this phone call right here.
My name's Paul.
Well, let's start this movement. Instead of trying to pretend, I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. Instead of saying that there's no such thing as sex addiction, let's start getting people to admit that they are high-functioning sex addicts. I'll admit that right now. I'm not afraid.
I admit it too.
Right on the internet.
Wait. Right, that's what I've been saying, is that either there's no such thing as sex addiction or everybody's a sex addict, because I don't know one person in this world who doesn't, male or female, who doesn't absolutely love sex.
I actually had another thought that actually supports your argument, which is so forget what I said earlier about the stepping out on your wife. If the cultural norm is that you have sex with a lot of different people, then, and your wife's okay with that, awesome, right? So it's not really just about it is about not cheating, but it's not only about only having sex with one person.
Mm-hmm.
It's about not violating a trust or violating a commitment or violating a bond that you have with someone, right?
Then so that's what they should call it.
If that bond includes, you know, okay, you can do this, you know, I'll do that, then fine, right? But let's just say this. If you only have sex within that agreed upon bond, which for most people would be only with your wife or only with your husband, you can have it as much as you want.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You can do it, like you said, all freaking day long. Right? Agreed. And nobody's ever going to say that's a problem unless you ever, right? I suppose you could start missing work, but if people are okay with that, then who cares, right? Whereas with like booze or pills or whatever, that creates problems, right? So maybe you're onto something there. Like, what is it about the addiction that causes you to break the? You don't have a sex addiction.
You have a cheating addiction.
You have a cheating addiction.
That's a good point.
For the excitement of cheating. Right. You have a breaking the rules addiction.
Right. It's the thrill of getting caught.
Why don't we get into that after the break?
Paul wants to go cheat real quick.
That's right.
He's going to come back.
I'm going to do a little show prep and then get me a beer.
I'm going to go show prep and then I'm going to refill my drink. And then it doesn't take me long to show prep. I mean, it's like boom.
Well, there's various kinds of show prep. There's like the romantic kind. And then I got to get going here. So let's wrap this up. So.
Mm-hmm.
And when we come back, we'll find out, are we really sex addicts?
I'm fucking bored, man. Boredom's the first step on the road to relapse. Oh. Would you fuck me?
Macaroni and cheese. Hello, Manny. We think it should be called Kraft Cheese and Macaroni, because it tastes the cheesiest. What'd they say? They'd have to change them all your boxes.
Kraft Macaroni and Cheese has more cheese than any other brand. That's why it tastes the best.
There's one. A million boxes? I think we're going to need more crayons.
Kraft Cheese and Macaroni, the cheesiest.
If the day's events have you in an uproar, don't panic. It's Steve and Paul to the rescue.
You know, what's sad is I have certain insight into this thing, kind of.
You've been cheated on, or you cheated on?
I've been cheated on, and I've also done things I probably shouldn't have done. but not while I was married. Not anything about that. I'm talking about I was the other guy.
But are you a sex addict?
Yes.
I've been spit at and missed, shit on and hit.
I do totally get that. When you guys started talking about that rush thing, I'm like, yeah, I know exactly what that rush feels like. And
which one?
Now, Tolan, it's funny because Tolan was the one who took the conversation in that direction the other night. And I actually had not thought of that at all. And when I started saying it's about the cheating, you're not addicted to sex, you're just a cheater. And he said, yeah, but that's the rush. He said, it's the thrill of am I going to get caught? I'm going to do this thing that feels really good. And he actually made a really good comparison. He said it's like sneaking out of the house when you're like 15 years old. You know, if you get past the driveway, you feel fucking indestructible. Yep. Like you can do anything, regardless of what you're sneaking out of the house to do, whether you're sneaking out of the house to go smoke pot or drink your first beer or go to a show or just sneak out of the house to go hang out at somebody else's house, which would have been fine to say to mom and dad, hey, I'm going to go out and go hang out at Joe's house for a couple hours. They'd probably be cool with that. But no, sneaking out feels a lot better.
So that probably goes all the way back to the whole dopamine thing. Because while you're doing that, you know that shit's flying free and crazy in your brain.
Boop. That's the addiction. It's not about sex. It's just about cheating. Yeah. It's like anything else that you do, like gambling. I wouldn't even put drugs and alcohol in the same thing, although the dopamine point is really valid. It's about how much can I get away with.
Welcome back to the Don't Panic Radio Show. We're still telling lies and talking shit. And Paul Schultz is still sitting there. MP's still sitting over there, vaping away. That's good. You're blowing smoke rings.
It's not smoke.
You're blowing... Is it not smoke? Is it just vapor? There are no particulates whatsoever there?
It's just vapor. There's no smoke.
Yeah. Is that non-GMO vapor or organic free range?
Well, nobody knows now because the federal government's in charge of the production of it. So
we like them being in charge, though, right? I mean, that's a thing we like, right?
That's another show.
As postmodern liberals, we like that kind of thing. Anyway, speaking of people that don't listen to the show, more than once, I've read texts from my soon-to-be former program manager, and I recently informed her that I will be leaving, and it was one of the hardest phone calls I ever made, and it was made even harder by me all I could do not to respond and like not to get into it.
Was it harder than like breakup phone calls?
Yes. Wow. Well, first of all, I would never break up with somebody over the phone.
Oh, like, I would. I have. Yeah, I'm sure
you. Oh, you do it by fax.
I wish I had broken up with a few girls over the phone. Or text, if we had text. I can't say text because I've been married. I was married when text first came out.
Mm-hmm.
So I never had the opportunity.
I can't do face-to-face breakup because I'll get weak and like, relent and be stuck back in the same situation because that actually happened a couple times.
Over the phone, man. That's why I posted George Costanza on my Facebook thing, because that's exactly what it was like. It was like, this is just like breaking up, and then I get weak, you know. So that was last week. This week I got another text from her that said, "I hope you know how valuable you've been to me and the entire program. And very sorry I am to lose you. I hope I was not part of your deciding to leave. You could have a much more meaningful role in phase two. But there are specific elements in this remediation program that we must establish, which could be valuable to you. Hey, I'm not promising anything, but I've discussed with the two client people the need to establish a PMO for... Put the cover the part up with the rooster.
would you be interested? Don't tell me how to do my job.
Yeah. Would you be interested in a permanent role there to establish this PMO? I'm just like, oh, God, stop it.
First of all, it almost sounds like the next two sentences should be me, am big titties, you, me, sex now.
I'm not going to say that you're racist for doing that because you didn't know she was Asian, but
the way you read it,
that sounds like virtually every Craigslist ad I ever answered.
Damn.
It sounds like every email that goes into my junk folder.
Damn, girl, you have an Asian accent on your text. It's weird.
It's a certain cadence.
Seriously though, in case she's listening, she doesn't have an Asian accent. She has a very American accent, which means she was born to Asian parents, probably second or first generation. So, I don't want to disparage her by saying that she has an Asian accent, which is pretty racist of me to say, because that sort of disparages anyone who has a racist accent.
Once again, it's just too complicated to not be racist.
That was a double reverse...
All right, let me go back and say, okay, it sounds like the next two lines should be,
we love you long
I have
time.
$4 million waiting in an account for you. Please contact me immediately at the Bank of
Nigeria. You know what the one thing that the text could say that would actually get me to dishonor my commitment to the client I've already accepted, that I've already committed to, would be, we will double your rate and you can work from home 3 days a week. I'd be like, damn.
That would turn me into a sex act. I was going to say,
so he's dishonoring his commitment. That's what you call a callback.
That's a pretty complex callback.
You know what you are, Steve. You know what you are, Steve. You're a money addict.
I am.
Yeah.
I am. I
should get into a program.
I fit all the criteria of being a money addict.
Yeah.
Except for the part where I never have any. It's weird.
Well, you know, most addicts are broke anyway, so...
Oh, true.
Yeah.
I had this idea today. Let me see what you guys think of this idea. I've been listening to this book. I've been reading this book. I think you could say reading even if you're listening to it. Anyway,
you're experiencing the book.
I'm experiencing this book. And it's a futurist wrote it, and it's called The Inevitable. And basically, he's going through all of the trends and mega trends and phases, and he's like, sort of laying out what the next 30 years might look like. And he has all of the forces. There's like 12 of them. And one of them is sharing, which is, you know, if you look at a lot of what's happening, there's a lot of sharing going on. Like, open source software. When open source operating systems first, you know, came out, it was like Linux, and like it was just geeks with their PC using Linux. And you go, okay, cool for you geeks with your PCs, but it'll never catch on beyond you guys, right? Which is, you know, classic curmudgeon. It's classic old fogies talk, right? Then they started making server software, and then you go, okay, fine for little startups in Silicon Valley, they'll use your open source server software. But then I end up at my first gig in Indianapolis was at Clarion, which is now IU Health, down by Methodist Hospital in IT, and they were using Red Hat Apache open source server operating systems. And I was like, damn. And that was like 11, 12 years ago. So basically this guy is saying the sharing thing is huge because people will do a lot of work. They will share stuff that they've poured their heart and soul into for free. And then he was talking about Facebook. People, you know, nobody thought people would share the intimate details of their life with the world, but now here you go. Everybody's doing it. So here's my idea. That's a long way to go to get to this part.
I'll speed it up in post.
Yeah, right. And I'll sound like Alvin the Chipmunk. finances. All right. I was just reading this other book. It's a different book about, you know, personal finance. And a lot of your personal finance books talk about where you should be investing your money. And it's like, none of them talk about how to get some money to invest. But this one, the first like quarter of the book gets into, they're like, one thing you need to know is no matter how much money you make, most people don't have enough because they spend more than whatever they make. So believe it or not, he's like, some people don't believe it's possible to live on $30,000 a year, right? And there are other people who think that if they only had $30,000 a year, they'd be living the high life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he starts ratcheting it up, and he gets to the point where he's like, there are people who think that living on $120,000 a year is impossible, you know, while there are other people who think that would be rich, right? And you could take that number all the way up. And the problem isn't how much money people make. It's that people can't get out of a mindset of spending more than they make. And maybe the thing that would help people get out of that, me included, is a public sharing of our finances. Not with our friends, because there's this weird thing that our parents taught us, you never talk about money. Plus there's this weird sort of ego attachment we have to our money that says, if everybody finds out how horrible I am at managing my money, they're going to find out what a horrible person I am and how I'm just a fraud and, you know, nothing I've ever done was worth anything. I don't know why we attach that, but we do. So if you could share it on sort of an anonymous network and get other people to start going, oh, well, here's your problem. You're spending that much on that? Dude, you need to do this. Instead of spending that on that, you need to do this other thing, you know? And maybe there would be this peer pressure from virtual strangers that would cause us to start watching our finances better. So, thanks once again for listening. Thanks for liking and sharing.
I got to run over to Grove House right now.
I got to run over to Grove House real quick, get into the soundproof booth, stop by the production desk to find out who the band is tonight.
Pick up your check.
Announce them properly. Pick up my check. And for MP Cavalier, for Paul Schultz, Do It Indie Radio Hour is next. I'm Steve Benson. Nothing you just heard was true.
I just love how you leave that on a hook.
Yeah, like, where's the rest? Temperature's rising. Fever is high. Can't see no future. Sky. My feet are so heavy.
Bullshit.